You're listening to The Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. Up next on The Jefferson Exchange, Morgan Ackley will host a series of short news features from around our region.
I'm Morgan Ackley. It's another drought year in the Klamath Basin, and thousands of birds on the Lower Klamath wildfire refugees have died of avian botulism. JPR's Juliet Grable reports on how water users, tribes, conservation groups, and government agencies are collaborating to save thousands more from dying.
Teresa Wicks peers through a spotting scope next to a wetland at the Tule Lake National Wildlife Refuge in Siskiyou County, California. She's tracking eared grebes, small water birds with thin bills and distinctive red eyes.
There's an adult with a chick swimming behind it, swimming from left to right. So you might have to move the scope to the right a little bit.
Wicks is Eastern Oregon biologist and program manager at the Bird Alliance of Oregon. Earlier this summer, she saw around 1,500 eared grebe nests at Lower Klamath National Wildlife Refuge. In July, as the wetlands rapidly dried, many of those nests were abandoned. Around the same time, an outbreak of avian botulism began killing ducks and water birds in both refuges.
I would say the majority of nests seem like they failed. Yeah, it was a big bummer.
Once birds started dying, Klamath Water Users Association and irrigation districts worked with the Bureau of Reclamation to move water into the refuges. Staff picked up diseased carcasses so they wouldn't infect other birds. Volunteers with Bird Ally X began treating sickened birds at a duck hospital. Botulism is naturally occurring in Western ecosystems, but severe outbreaks have been more frequent in recent years. In 2024, at least 128,000 birds died at the Klamath refuges. U.S. Fish and Wildlife estimates nearly 14,000 birds have died in this year's outbreak. Jeff McCreary is Director of Operations for Ducks Unlimited's Western Region. He says the key to combating botulism is deeper water that keeps the mudflats covered.
You need to be able to circulate the water that you have. You need to be able to oxygenate that water by circulating it. And if you can cool it down, that's even better.
On August 17th, Reclamation began releasing more water into the refuges. Numbers of dying birds immediately dropped. In a press release, the agency credited the hard work of the entire Klamath Basin community for making these critical water deliveries possible. Water users, tribes, conservation groups, and government agencies have been collaborating on long-term solutions that could help prevent devastating botulism outbreaks and improve the overall health of the watershed.
We'll just go inside here and give you an idea of what it is.
Just down the road from refuge headquarters, Scott Soyce opens the door to a concrete structure called D-Plant.
Come on in, the bats like it in here too.
He's a third-generation farmer and president of Klamath Water Users Association. The five pumps in this 1940s-era building are the linchpin of a strategy called flow-through.
Flow-through is the idea that you bring fresh water in from several points and move it across the wetland and back to these pumps that are pulling from the opposite side.
Klamath Project infrastructure would be used to circulate water from Upper Klamath Lake through agricultural lands and wetlands and back to the Klamath River. Soyce says the strategy would provide healthy habitat for birds and fish and water for farmers. The wetlands would help clean the water before it's returned to the river.
This is the filter for the project. This is where you're going to take the high phosphorus that's coming out of Upper Klamath Lake.
Any movement of water must honor water rights and comply with federal biological opinions for both coho salmon and chuam and koptu, two endangered suckerfish that dwell in Upper Klamath Lake and its tributaries. McCreary of Ducks Unlimited says finding solutions with all of these constraints isn't easy.
And it creates a situation where there has to be a lot of communication, a lot of coordination between agencies, between tribes, between water users, between conservation organizations.
The Klamath tribes have expressed support for the birds and long-term ecosystem-based strategies, but they stress no solution should come at the expense of lake levels that protect chuam and koptu, which are important to the tribe's culture and health. Brad Parrish is water specialist at the Klamath tribes. He says restoring wetlands and streams around the upper basin is needed to bolster resilience in the watershed and will ultimately provide more flexibility in how water is managed.
I just think we have a lot of work to do, and we can't forget these issues associated with this, like this botulism or fish kills. They're just symptoms of a bigger problem.
Soyce says meetings between the many groups are still happening, and he hopes a pilot version of flow-through can begin this fall. That would be good news for the thousands of birds that rely on the refuges. and for all who are invested in a healthy Klamath watershed. In Tule Lake, California, I'm Juliet Grable.
Sometimes therapy looks like two people talking in an office. Other times it looks like leading a horse around an arena and encouraging it to jump over a hurdle. Jefferson Public Radio's Peyton Gast reports on how mental health professionals in Oregon are using horses to help teens.
Lunchtime. Ruby and Roxy, two hardworking therapy horses, are chomping down hay at their troughs. Roxy just got back to the horse pen. She spent the morning with therapy clients at Ruby Ranch Mental Health in Grants Pass. Laura Williams is the equine specialist at Ruby Ranch.
Horses are so in tune to human emotion, and like they can read these kids like a book.
There's no writing involved in equine-assisted psychotherapy. Instead, it's about establishing a connection with the horse. If a client is overly excited, Ruby might keep her distance. But if the client can take a few deep breaths and regulate themselves, Ruby might feel comfortable approaching. Melissa Sargent discovered the power of horses at 15. At the time, she felt lost, grappling with questions about her adoption. As an infant, the state removed Sargent and her siblings from their parents twice. The pair was battling drug addiction, and the second time, they chose not to fight for custody.
I took a lot of it to heart. Like, did I do something wrong? Like, was I a bad kid?
Sargent says she was adopted by an amazing family, but struggled to find peace with her past. Her older sister wanted to find her a positive outlet, so she reached out to a local ranch. That's where Sargent met Williams, who was managing the ranch at the time. The two bonded immediately.
In the end, she kind of became like a daughter to me.
Sargent cleaned stalls and assisted Williams in breeding the stallions. One of them, Dorado, was acting restless. Williams talked to him about the importance of staying in the moment. Sargent says the message resonated in her own life.
Watching her and him together made me see like, hey, being present is kind of what it's about. Like, I don't have to be in my own head worrying about why my parents didn't want to be parents to me. I could just be present.
Sargent said the message stuck. Ruby Ranch owner Kim Ibarra says interactions with horses act as a metaphor for real life, like the way Sargent saw herself in Dorado.
Oftentimes, jumps can represent like obstacles or things that they face in their life.
Ibarra is a licensed clinical social worker. During therapy, she makes statements about the horse's actions, and often the clients explain back how they interpret the actions. From there, Ibarra determines what kind of therapy modality to use. Many of Ibarra's kids are in the foster care system and have trauma attached to their human relationships. The experience of working with horses can make therapy feel more approachable.
They're not as offended as of Roxy walking away as they would, like, say, their mom, right? It's a safer place to practice the same skills, and then once they get the hang of it, they can apply it to their relationships.
Ibarra says her program has been effective for many kids who felt stuck in regular therapy, but it's one of few in Southern Oregon, leaving Ruby Ranch in high demand.
There are so many things that make it difficult or less enticing for providers to come to rural areas.
Ibarra's wait list to see clients is sometimes 5 months long. Hiring another therapist could shorten the line, but it's complicated. Ibarra says there aren't many therapists to begin with, and Ruby Ranch doesn't often get the first pick of providers compared to larger organizations. Insurance can pose another barrier. She used to work with the insurer Care Oregon, but in 2025, the group cut its out-of-network providers, including Ibarra, so she had to stop seeing three clients. At the beginning of 2026, Ruby Ranch became a nonprofit.
We wanted to be able to offer scholarships and get grants for clients who couldn't access our care.
The Ruby Scholarship lasts for 8 sessions before clients reapply. William says Ibarra's ability to receive money from local foundations has made a big difference.
All that kind of stuff helps her open the door for people who can't afford to pay for the sessions, but also maybe can't get covered through their insurance as well.
Ibarra says it's hard to fully understand the power in this kind of therapy without seeing it. So every quarter, Ruby Ranch hosts an equine-assisted psychotherapy demonstration. Ibarra hopes the events with Ruby and Roxy will spread the word about her services and lay the groundwork for local partnerships. Peyton Gast, JPR News.
A small but growing community near Popular Lake in Central Oregon is hoping to attract a grocery store to town. Right now, the closest fresh food requires at least a 20-minute round-trip drive. OPB's Jen Bitus reports.
I think I have everything for tomorrow.
Debbie Taylor grabs her keys and sends out one last email before leaving work.
All right, Claire, did you need anything else in here? Do you want me to lock it?
Taylor is the executive director of the Madras Jefferson Chamber of Commerce. She's also a mom to three teenagers. It's a busy life. On the way home, she has to make a few stops near her office in Madras for essentials she can't buy where she lives.
I gotta write a sticky note. This is how it goes. Milk, I gotta do bank, and milk, and then Martin's produce.
The Taylors ran out of milk last night.
It's like the end of the world for teenagers, but for me, it's like, okay, all right, add that to the list of what I need to get.
Taylor lives in Culver, a small town about 10 miles southwest of Madras. It sits just outside of the towering columns of basalt rock cliffs in the Cove Palisades State Park, on the edge of Lake Billy Chinook. The nearest markets with fresh produce, dairy, and meat are about a 15-minute drive, one way. The USDA considers it a food desert, one of many in Oregon. Experts say that without easy access to fresh foods, communities like Culver often see an increase in diet-related illnesses and an over-reliance on prepackaged or highly processed foods instead.
Give us a small grocery store. Give us a, I don't know, mini Walmart, if you want to call it that. Someone who can provide fresh produce, fresh fruits, you know, meats, ice cream, those kinds of things all in one location, I think it would be a good option.
Plenty of other people who live in Culver agree. So many, in fact, that the city officially took up the charge this year. Karen Crouch is Culver's city administrator. In January, she helped secure a $50,000 grant to conduct a feasibility study into opening a store in town.
One of the things that came up when I met with all of the counselors and different community members is they would really like to have fresh produce and fresh meat grocery options.
Crouch says a grocery store is the next step toward making Culver a more livable community. About a year ago, the city completed $1 million-plus expansion of its park to include pickleball courts, a bike pump track, and a skate park.
The parks are nice, and we've got that. We've got great views, we've got great people, but now we just want to fill in some of the services.
The pressure to fill those service gaps is intensifying as the city grows. In February, a housing developer broke ground on a 160-home subdivision, a significant development in a city with a population of around 2,000. The local post office is so overrun with deliveries that Crouch says they have to sort packages outside. And since 2019, Culver's average annual household income has essentially doubled from $46,000 a year to $91,000 at last count.
That's why I say I think that this feasibility study will help us not only for grocery options, but perhaps for other industries as well.
The study is just wrapping up with results expected later this month. Crouch is hopeful that with the city's growth in income and population, as well as its increase in tourists passing through to fish and play at Lake Billy Chinook, it'll be an attractive option for the right retailer. She says easier access to fresh food would especially help residents with limited mobility and those without reliable transportation. Culver is served by a Cascades East Transit bus.
But it's not as convenient as being able to be within your surroundings.
Until then, residents like Taylor will continue to shop miles away. With the last of her errands run and a dozen ears of corn and a couple gallons of milk secured, Taylor is finally on the way home, nearly an hour after leaving her office. She says if there were options closer to home, it would give her some time back at the end of her often busy days.
I would have just headed home and be able to stop on my way versus calculating where I'm going to go and what I'm going to get and be able to get it in a one-stop shop.
Or if Culver does manage to get a grocery store, perhaps one of her teenagers could pick up the milk themselves. Jen Bitus reporting.
That's it for today's Exchange. I'm Mike Green. JeffExchange.org is our website where you can find these conversations and more, or you can subscribe to our shows wherever you get your podcasts.